Welcome to the Andy Social Podcast. My name is Andy. As always, it hasn't changed. And thank you so much for listening. If this is your first time listening to this podcast, please excuse the horrible echo that may be evident in this intro. I'm recording this from my hotel room here in Perth, and there's a lot of brick wall and tile, and there's a lot of noise bouncing all over the place. So I'll try and keep this short and sweet. But this podcast is all about talking to people from all walks of life, different industries, different backgrounds. People have experienced different things, have got a story to tell. People that have been through adversity, people that have had a lot of success, a bit of everything. And the aim of the game for me anyway is to learn a lot more, to get out of my comfort zone, try and get some new perspective on life, have a bit more of an open mind when it comes to all sorts of things in life, and as a result, become a better person. So part of this is to talk to people from all different industries and walks of life. And my background has been primarily for many years in the music world. So whilst there have been a lot of music guests on the podcast, as recent as last week with Alex from Voyager, I am always trying to talk to different people that normally I wouldn't probably associate with or talk to, just because of my own sort of insular circles. So this week, with that in mind, is an episode with a gentleman by the name of John Storwood. And John is the owner and operator. Owner and operator, is that right? Well, we'll say he's the owner of Nail Brewing. And Nail Brewing is a craft beer company that is based out of Perth. And John's been in the industry in Western Australia for quite a number of years as far as brewing craft beers and trying to get his enterprise up and running. And he's had a lot of success and some recent success as far as upscaling his business and working alongside with some bigger partners. And it looks like the next few years for him are going to be quite intensive and hopefully groundbreaking for him and his business. I recorded this probably about an hour ago. I've just got back to my hotel room. It is 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm already three beers in. John was very, very kind and courteous to let me sample some of the amazing beers that they're brewing there. So I've had the VPA, Very Pale Ale, which is at the moment their biggest seller at the moment. And he's also given me some roadies, some Nail Brewing Red Ale. So the VPA was 6.5%, the Red Ale 6%, and he's been very kind to give me a case of Nail Ale, so the classic pale ale, which is 4.7%, and he's given me a very intriguing unmarked bottle of stout as well that he said to share with somebody special. So Jess, we're drinking stout, and if you don't like stout, then you're gonna begin to like it. So I'll bring that back to Sydney. So I've got to be very careful with the remainder beer here. I will try and bring the rest of it back to Sydney and pace myself for the rest of the day. But what an amazing company! What an amazing guy! John's been through so much over the years. Sort of hustling, and he's got a big DIY approach. He's learnt from experience rather than trying to, I guess, get qualifications and whatnot. He's done some study here and there, but a lot of it's just been that practical approach of just hitting the ground running and doing whatever he can to just make things happen on his own accord. And he's had a lot of success because of it. His operation at the warehouse that I visited was incredible. They're sharing with Feral Brewing, and it's just there's so much room for expansion there already. There's just, I can't even describe the size of this place. And I'm sure, like, this is the first place I've ever been to as far as a professional sort of major sort of brewing enterprise, and probably not major in the grand scheme of things compared to some of the mainstream brewers in Australia, but this was still pretty impressive for me. And you can definitely see where the growth is going to be, and I think there's a lot of exciting things in the pipeline for John and Nail Brewing. So as always, all of the details, links and whatnot will be in the show notes on andysocial.net. Also andydowling.net if you would like to use that alternative link. So I'll have everything there. If you do want to go and check out Nail Brewing, so if you're in Western Australia, it's a lot easier to get this beer. There are parts of Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria that do sell Nail Brews, but hopefully it will become more evident and easier to obtain over the next couple of years as well. But really, really good beer, great branding. There's a great story behind it as John goes through in this episode, talks about some of the background and the early beginnings of the company. He talks about some of the adversity and challenges that he's had to go through personally and also professionally of just trying to, I guess, take those next steps to become you know, a bigger operation. But if you want to check out Nail Brewing, social media, just search for Nail Brewing, but you can also go to nailbrewing.com.au. So that's nailbrewing.com.au. And you'll get a glimpse of the story behind the business, some background, some of the limited edition of beers that we talked about during this podcast episode, some really cool things that he's done over the years to acknowledge and tip the hat to those that have helped him personally and professionally over the years. And it's really, really cool. And I use that analogy or comparison to when we as musicians write a music, oh my God, too many beers already, write a song that's in dedication to somebody in particular, or the lyrical content is written with somebody in mind. So it's sort of the beer equivalent of this, and it's really, really cool, and it adds to more stories behind the brand. And for you marketing gurus out there that love branding and ways to connect with customers and get people to be loyal and passionate supporters of a product or a service, this is a really cool episode and something that hopefully you'll get a lot of interest and value out of. So enough of me rambling. I'm going to have another sip of my beer, and I promise this will be my last beer for a while. I'm lying to myself, I know. Please enjoy this episode with John from Nail Brewing. Well, John, thanks for having me here. This is a crazy size operation that you've got happening.
You're welcome. Thanks for coming along.
Yeah, no worries. And thanks for the beer as well. This is a nice introduction to the company and to the brew. I was just going to say, actually, what are we drinking? Very pale ale. You mentioned this is the big seller at the moment.
It is. We only bought it out just around Christmas time. Our first beer into cans with the Nail Ale, and it's selling really good, both in package and on taps is slowly growing too. So it's a great inclusion to the Nail range.
And it packs a punch, 6.5%.
Yeah, let's not say the time it is.
That's all right, it's a weekend. I think just to give a bit of background, I mentioned this before, I was looking for people to talk to when I was coming over here for the weekend in Perth, and I've got a friend of mine who loves to think of himself as a bit of a beer expert, and I asked about some of the independents that are over here, and Nail popped up. And so doing a bit of research and reading the website and seeing the background of the business and the origins and whatnot, it seemed to be an interesting one to approach. And I'll probably be meeting up with him later on today, so I'm sure if we can track some down, I'll have to ask you what the distribution of this is like as well. But that's how I'm here right now, drinking an extremely cold and refreshing beer, so it's fantastic.
Yep. No, it's been a long journey with Nail. We started back in 2000. Actually, we turned 17 on March 23rd, a couple of days ago.
All right, okay.
And so it's been a long journey, many ups and downs, and passion and never give up attitude keeps us moving forward.
You've, reading on the website, because one of the good things that's and this is probably from a marketing point of view that seems to connect a lot of people to particular brands and whatnot, and you get a lot of loyalty, is to have that sort of personal connection, that story. And reading sort of the origins of yourself in sort of the beer industry and brewing and working in sort of that craft beer world, and then eventually forming this, and then the steps after that, getting to Brew Corp as well, and moving into this massive warehouse, which you just walked around and showed me. It's just incredible, the size of this place. It's quite interesting to see that journey and that story. Was there a reason as to why you wanted to sort of really highlight, I guess, the background on the website and talk about that story?
I guess where it started was back in 1994.
Yep.
Me and best mate Luke bought another best mate Craig a homebrew kit, hoping that he would make us beer. It was above our budget, but we thought it was a good idea. But unfortunately, it backfired. And Craig, after a couple of batches, gave the brew kit to me and said, "You make the beer." So this is a long time ago, 94, and I started home brewing, and the beer was inconsistent, sometimes good, sometimes bad, but it got drunk.
Yeah, as it does, yeah.
But I guess where the nail story started there is I called the beer back then Nail Ale.
Yep.
And back then we didn't have really computers like we do now, and I to make the logo, I cut out of the paper the word sale and use the word A-L-E for ale.
Yep.
And cut and use the word the letters L and A for nail, and then just drew the N and the
nice
and the nail myself, and photocopied it, made posters, and people started stealing the posters, and I started getting orders for the beer, but the beer needed improvement.
Yep.
And I wasn't doing commercially, but it was just on the friend front, and I got some t-shirts made, and got bit of passion started, and so in 95 I registered the trademark Nail Ale, and then finished my studies and did a little bit of travelling to the US and saw things happening and realised that if I do want to make the move into brewing, I need to know how to brew good beer.
Mm.
Unfortunately, back then there weren't any educational facilities in Australia that backed people wanting to learn to brew beer, but opportunity popped up at University of Ballarat. They used to run a brewing course 10 years earlier, and they had an old facility there, a pilot brewery with a 100-litre pilot system, and they let me do honours in science.
Wow, yeah.
And my project was development of a full-strength ale, and I did basically 40, 45 test batches of testing beers, of seeing what people wanted, like testing the colour, testing the bitterness, testing the flavour, testing the alcohol levels. And from that, you know, I learnt a lot of what the market wanted in like 1998, 1999, and basically everyone was all Australians were pretty much lager drinkers.
Yeah, yeah.
The market was dominated by the two big breweries, still pretty much is today, but changing, and there was no craft beer. The name didn't even exist. So the original beer that Nail first made was Nail Ale, which is an Australian pale ale, and was made as a transition beer from lager drinkers to try something with a little bit more flavour.
Yep.
Not too full on, but worth try and
a bit of a transition beer.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly that. So I studied brewing, but then obviously needed a brewery, and I spoke to my dad used to sail with a friend, and he was related to Maurice Brockwell, and Maurice Brockwell, he unfortunately passed away in about 2003, but he was the creator in many of the theme pubs like Rosie O'Grady's, Bridie O'Reilly's, Moon Sixpence, Elephant Wheelbarrow, and I had a little proposal about setting up a 100-litre pilot in some pubs around Perth.
Yep.
And he said, come and I'll give you some advice. And I came and sat down with him, and it was an honour for someone like him to give me some time. And he said, first of all, we'll look over your proposal, and then possibly look at a place in this pub, which is Bobby Dazza's, where you can put a brewery.
Mm.
So today, the Nail Red, which is an American hoppy red ale, is if you look on the label in the finer print, it's got brewed for Maurice Brockwell.
Yep, nice.
And in recognition for helping me get my foot in the door. And so that was in like 1999. And I've got a great family backing, two sisters and mum and dad. And my parents, because a 100-litre pilot brewery doesn't add up, even though I had an enthusiasm and passion to get the beer on the market, you really need bigger, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the volume. Probably 3,000 liters for wholesale only. I guess you can do brew. You can make money from beer in two different ways. You can have a brew pub, which has the retail market of the beer and the theatre of the brewery, and you can run a good business from there with a good location. Or you can do it wholesale, which if you do it that way, you need to sell a lot of beer and be able to brew it at an economic scale to make it add up. And today I'm still not at that scale, but I keep working hard trying to get there.
Do you think that the wholesale side of things is more viable long term than having sort of a standalone bar pub?
For someone, like I took a different route, probably not the smartest route, but somewhat the cheapest route, but the hardest route. Probably the best way to start with a brew pub and then wholesale, whether you want to go that direction, you really need to invest in a decent size setup like we've got today and really sell about 1 million litres a year. So it's a lot of beer and I'm just trying to get over that hill.
Yeah. Are you able to say what you're at the moment as far as if that pinnacle that goal's 1 million?
Yeah. So at the moment with brew, we're still small because I'll get back to my story soon, our ups and downs. But so at the moment we brew about 370,000 litres with, I guess, 25% growth.
Yeah.
With this new facility, the plan is to now we can concentrate on sales and hopefully get that growth a lot quicker, especially with launching beers like the VPA. Hopefully that can help us double production sooner than later.
Yeah, absolutely. That's incredible. Going back to what you said before with sort of getting that foot in the door with that 100-litre concept or business proposal that you had, did you have any experience of how to even put together a business proposal? Did you have anybody that was sort of guiding you with that? Because when I think about that sort of stuff, it does my head in. I wouldn't even know where to start.
Yeah, so I'm pretty much self-taught and go and get advice off people that know better.
Mm.
And Mr. Dillon, Michael Dillon, who's actually starting to help us again today, but he back in that time, he was helping us, give us advice on the proposal, give us direction on, what I need. And I didn't really know how to run a business back then, and it's still very hard to do.
Yeah.
But you learn from mistakes, I guess.
That's it. That's probably the DIY approach, isn't it? Where even from our backgrounds with music and whatnot, you just learn as you go, and sometimes you probably get quicker traction and you get better results or quicker results by just diving in and just giving it a go instead of spending a lot of time studying and trying to find the perfect set of circumstances to make that first move, and you end up missing the boat altogether. So sometimes it's just better to just blindly jump in and give it a go.
I'd often also one of the first beer books I ever read was Laurie Strack and wrote it, and I sent him a letter and saying, like, how can I get into brewing here? He was the one that told me about University of Ballarat, and he told me about a software program which I still use today, which I bought on a 3.5-inch disc.
Yeah.
But it's it's a bit more complicated to use on the new computers, but
you got to frame that. That's a piece of history now.
Yeah. Or, when you can get advice from people that know better, it's makes your path easier.
Definitely. That's a big thing that we found as well, where you're always the sum of the people that you spend time with, and if you want to try and excel in anything, you've got to try and surround yourself with people that have done it or are doing it and doing it at a level that you want to try and achieve. So you've got to try and find those people that influence you and I guess push you to try and break out of your comfort zone.
Yeah. You need to succeed in anything in life, whether it be sports or music or business, you need passion and to never give up.
Yeah.
Because that's what everyone that succeeds, I think, has.
Yeah.
People that give up don't make it.
Yeah.
And it's... sounds simple, but that's the hard thing, is you've got to never give up.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of that, and we don't have to touch on it for too long, but I was intrigued by what was written on the website about the incident that you were involved with, where you end up going to hospital and were in a coma for a period of time.
Was back in 2004. That kind of stopped my life, but I'm lucky to be alive. So there was three girls and a bloke in an argument in Fremantle, and first of all I was protecting the three girls, and then I was protecting the bloke, and then I was coward punched by a friend of the three girls, and my mate Gareth was there, and the other bloke that I'd never knew ended up catching the bloke, which was good because yeah, I hit the ground hard, and I have many people to help on my me being alive. So first of all, I can't remember any of this. This is from people and police reports and stuff like that. But I, first of all, the police said that I had to go to hospital, and pretty much enforced me to, I think, and they saved my life there because it was on Easter long weekend, and I would have gone home and gone to sleep, and my friends were away that weekend, and would have died in my sleep. But so the police told me to go to Fremantle Hospital. The ambulance took me there. Then, you know, it took a while, I think, before they realised that I wasn't quite right. They did a CAT scan and realised my brain was swelling. So I took ambulance to Sir Charlie Gardner Hospital, where I was again helped by the Dr. Jefferson, Dr. Watson, who I've got Flaming Lamington being named after. Mm-hmm. They and the whole team there did a miracle. They first of all cut a little hole in my head, and then my brain swelled out, and they cut another hole in my head and then another hole in my head so that, you know, it would relieve the swelling. And I was in a coma for 10 days. And when I came out of the coma, when I was in the coma, I had all bad hallucinations. It was a nightmare. But, and this, I guess this whole episode was a nightmare. But when I came out of the coma, my family, who always support me, were around me, and I couldn't talk. I was like, thought I'd been kidnapped by drug dealers and that I was in America. And the family around, I was trying to tell them that this is what's happened, and they slowly pieced things together that that's what I was saying, and, you know, must have been like going, oh, no, this is not good. Because that wasn't true. And so then I was in intensive care for 3 weeks and started to learn to speak again. I couldn't even really write properly. I tried writing to get my communication across. 3 weeks in intensive care, then went to Shenton Park, Ward 1. I was there for another 3 weeks. So over this time I had a big hole in my head, which is kind of a hard time to just being from hardworking to suddenly being in hospital and, you know, just surviving a near-death experience. But I was lucky to be alive. And I then, after 3 weeks in Ward 1, I then was for the next year doing rehab 3 days a week and getting my physical health back, getting strong. I was probably the strongest I'd ever been because just going to the gym, trying to get my health. 7 months I had a hole in my head, and then they put some titanium in my head. It's amazing how good our health system is when you don't appreciate your doctors and nurses and stuff until you're in that position.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, they make the world so much better and help us when we're down, and then never appreciated enough, and you don't really thank them ever. And but I'm sure everyone that comes out of hospital is appreciative of what doctors and nurses do.
That's an incredible thing. And there's a friend of mine that I've had him on the podcast in the past, and he had a double lung transplant a few years ago, and he's only one of a handful of people that have successfully had it and survived. And he was in a coma for a month, and just when you mentioned about the drug dealers and the thing in the US and whatnot, he had a similar thing where he was getting kidnapped in a hospital in the United States, and then got taken over the border into Mexico, and he had these crazy dreams, and when he was coming in and out, he didn't know what was real and what wasn't, and it was an incredible thing. But one big thing that he said from the whole experience was that he was just, his whole view on the healthcare system in Australia is just, he understands now how amazing it is compared to the rest of the world. Like, if he was in the US, he would have died.
Yes.
It was just the support, and even from a financial point of view, it's just not there. So, I mean, touch wood, I'll never have to utilise those services, but to get that sort of insight from other people that have unfortunately had to go through it all, it's
pretty
incredible.
I think everyone, unfortunately, does have to go through it sometime in their life. Definitely with someone they know, whether it or themselves, you know. Yep. So we need to keep it like that.
Yeah, definitely. Has I guess going through all of that, did that change your perspective when you're back up on your feet and you sort of wanted to kickstart everything?
So I guess probably I recovered health wise, very lucky, a miracle in a way. Probably the hardest thing then was that the world boomed, like property in Perth doubled, everything boomed, where I lost, my parents saved me from going bankrupt. I sold my equipment to at that time it was the Mad Monk, now it's called the Monk.
Mm-hmm.
They've still got my old brew house there. And so then being able to start again was impossible.
Yeah.
For example, we're looking at a place in the Swan Valley and it was $500,000 and I thought that was expensive after my accident, which is really took a couple of years to recover. It was like $1.2 million and it just became impossible.
Yeah.
So that changed what I did. I did a little bit of consulting and became a gypsy brewer where I'd brew at other premises such as Jarrah Jack's. And then in 2008, I moved to Edith Cowan. They had an educational facility. And so I brewed at Edith Cowan from 2008 to about 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And always looking at the positives of negatives. One of the positives of me being having to brew at Edith Cowan was though it wouldn't add up financially and still hasn't, but Hugh Dunn, who's been a mentor to me, he and the Imperial Browns named after him, he did educated all new brewers coming through in that period, and I got to learn off him for 5 years and pick his brain and like to get answers for brewing problems you can't Google.
Mm.
There's you need someone that with the science and technical brain to be able to give the proper answer. So I was great to be able to have him as well. He's a best friend and still today, but to learn off him, and he really helped me lift another level.
Yeah, it's incredible. I think one thing, thing I noticed on the website was you've done, I think you called it the Brewlog, and so you've done a number of limited edition beers over the years that have sort of been in tribute to friends and people that have supported you and I guess the business to get it to where it is today.
Yeah, so I find it hard to do that now in the transition, but I've done quite a few, and so the first one was Dunn Brown for Hugh Dunn, which while I was waiting for the labels to get done, I did the Imperial Brown, which is now part of the core range, which is the no Imperial Brown. But then I did a Ralph beer, which is a smoky kind of bacon beer for my sister Catherine and Curly, who financially they've loaned me money when I needed it.
Yep.
And they've always supported us. Same as my other sister Jennifer and Kevin. But then the third one was Clayton Brew, which we're going to brew again this year. It's similar to Clout Stout, and that was brewed for my son Clayton, who when my first son Tarzan was born in 2010, I had more time as a father, but in 2012 when Clayton was born, I was working long hours getting the new warehouse happening, and it was kind of brewed for him for that. Then the next beer along, and now Clayton Brew is we're going to have as an annual beer. Speaking of that, also on the VPO, which is a new beer, you can see it's got brewed for Clayton and Tarzan, my two sons.
Oh, that's great.
The next one was Brockwell Brew Well, which ended up becoming part of the core range, now red for Morris Brockwell. The next one after that, I think, was Gareth Skywalker, which is brewed for Gareth, my friend who helped catch the guy that attacked me.
Oh, yep.
So, which ended up leading to we had a agreement that he would get a 2-year suspended, or he'd get a suspended sentence if I had mediation with him, which I needed to have mediation with him to move on.
Yeah.
So we had mediation where I sat on one end of the table, he sat on the other, and have a mediator, and it kind of gave me closure of that to be able to move on. I understand he didn't mean to hurt me like he did. Unfortunately, he did. But having that, being able to close that, like if I'd never caught the guy that hit me, I'd always have that, I guess, want to kill that person. But yeah. And so Gareth gave me that closure. So Gareth Skywalker's next one, Brood. Then I did Wombat Wheat, which is named after Jamie Wombat, Stranger. And he helps me continuously all the time with legal advice. He's helping me now. He's helped me in the past. He's helped me from the beginning. Then the next one along was Flaming Lamington, which was for Dr. Jeffs and Dr. Yep. Watson, which is now an annual beer. And the last one before the move was for my ex-partner, Cindy Butcher, who's, you know, helped me a lot in the past.
That's great. It's sort of like somebody writing a song for somebody in dedication, but you're doing with Bruce, and it's pretty cool. It's very, I mean, I'm sure other people do it, but it's just such a unique thing, especially when you do it like a limited edition.
Yeah, I've still got many more to thank, and I still need to keep it going. It's just hard to bottle it at the moment, but I plan to keep it happening. This year we're just going to focus on the annual batches, which are like Clayton Brew, Red Carpet, which is still to be named after someone, but it's got to become an annual beer, and Beazle Brew, which we brew for one of our ex-distributors whose son passed away when he was 21, a tragic story, and we all keep that happening too.
Yeah, right. It's it's really, I quite enjoyed reading through the different beers and just where it's linked to, and there's a story behind each one. It's quite, especially for me playing music, and a lot of friends that write songs and do a lot of original music, and they're always writing with somebody in mind or a situation in mind. So each song's unique, and with this, it's each beer's unique, and it's got a story behind each one. The other one I was really intrigued by that I saw on the website was the Antarctic one that you did a little while ago. That's incredible. Do you want to give a bit of background on that one?
So my brother-in-law, Kevin McGinty, he has been on the Sea Shepherd three times down in the Antarctic, trying to stop the Japanese whaling and using research as their way to kill whales for food. And so he brought us back some ice from the Antarctic, from an iceberg from the water, and then melted it down and sent it from Tasmania to me in Perth, and we made about 30 bottles of it, and all the money sold went to the Sea Shepherd as a fundraiser, and it really took off. The first bottle sold for $800, but the following one by another doctor over east, I can't remember his name, but in New South Wales, who, it was a good way of giving money to the Sea Shepherd, but kind of having a little gift as you do it, I guess. So it's really why this beer sold for $1,850.
Yeah, well.
And then from there, the rest sold for between $800 to $1,200. You know, Clancy's bought some, and a lot of people got behind giving money to the Sea Shepherd by buying the beer, and it would have raised over $30,000 probably. And
it's incredible.
Captain Watson sent us a thank you scroll, which was appreciated. So it went crazy on the internet, because it was kind of the world's most expensive beer. Was somewhat of a gimmick beer to raise money for the Sea Shepherd, but it did its goal, and was great for Nail getting publicity and great fun, a lot of work, but it was enjoyable.
I just, the whole thing of bringing back some ice from the Antarctic and then obviously sort of melting that down and then transporting it from one side of this country to the other, and that in itself is a long way, but to have this ancient water that's been frozen for God knows how long to end up in bottles of beer, it gives it a really good novelty and a unique literal flavour to it. But it just makes the story even more compelling. And you've done well, because obviously people threw money behind it. It's a great cause. It's a great story. But just to have that uniqueness to it as well. So for somebody to be able to own a bottle, and I'm sure most people have got it sitting on a shelf somewhere. But just to say that, you know, what's in that bottle is from the Antarctic as well. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, it worked out good for everyone involved, from the people that bought the bottle to Nail to the Sea Shepherd. And it was hopefully, I guess, more people would do something like that to raise money for a charity.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. I was quite blown away with that. It's such a unique concept, and I'm sure there's been other things that have been attempted in the past, but actually one question on that. How many litres did that, or how big was the ice that he brought back? How many litres did that turn into?
So he brought back about 30 litres, and we made 30 bottles. What are they, 500ml bottles or something?
Yep. That's a decent amount. It would have cost a fair bit up front to sort of make that happen because it's such a small quantity.
Yeah, we used a little pilot system at Edith Cowan, and crew there helped us out and stuff, and like Clay and John and Hugh, and we just did it basically like a kind of a home brew and did 30 bottles of it.
Yeah. No, it's
but
it's
even just, you know, doing the labels, which you know, my ex Cindy would put on the bottles, and you know, it was a lot of people. Kevin, a lot of people involved, given help to get it put it all together.
Yeah, I guess it's like anything. When if you're brewing something in a larger quantity, then that cost per unit starts to go down. But when you're doing something in a very limited run, then I guess that those cost per unit are going to be considerably higher.
Yeah, like it's not. It's, I guess, something I did as on the side. It's not a, it doesn't add up.
Yeah.
I need to sell a million litres to make it to add up.
That's more for, there's more, there's a bigger purpose there, not to make money off those particular variants of these beers. It's more the story and the connection, I guess, the acknowledgement to what sits behind that beer, that person or organisation that does good things.
Yeah, everyone involved enjoyed it, and Sea Shepherd was stoked about it. So yeah, it was a success. Cool.
It's amazing. What's the distribution like for Nail at the moment? Is it mainly WA? Because I haven't seen a great deal of it on the East Coast. Speaking to people before coming over here, a few people knew about it.
Yeah, so I'll probably get back to say 2011. Back then, the excise rebate, you could only get it if you sold less than 30,000 litres.
Right.
Okay. So Edith Cowan allowed me to brew about 28,000 litres and then use other for their education. And so I was on low volume just selling Nail Ale to a few pubs. Nail Ale was actually really booming then, and, you know, it... But it did, you know, obviously 27,000 litres are not going to add up. So 28,000 litres. So Brendan from Ferrell, who's a best mate, and Ferrell's today's, say, six times bigger. Now and Ferrell, pretty much the two most awarded breweries consistently every awards for the last 10 years. We're both, I guess, respect each other, trust each other, but have the same goals and same problems. And back in 2011, I needed a brewery and he needed a brewery. So we bought a brewery together, which is called Brew Corp. We set up that in Bassendean for our One Collier Road, and that enabled Nail to move from the limit. And Edith Cowan knew I was going to do that, and they said, okay, to break that, basically let us break the excise threshold, and that enabled us to get up to 55,000 litres in that short period before the new brewery took off. And so in 2012, Brew Corp started, and I started bottling commercially on the first time. Like, even though I did it at Edith Cowan, it was didn't add up. It was very labour intensive, even at on my hands. It's a lot of work and very hard. The packaging market is very hard. It's easy to probably get into places and distribute it, but it's hard to make it add up. Then in 2016, we, Ferrell's, mainly due to Ferrell's growth, and they know I'd grown a lot from its 55,000 litres. We had to move up to 323 Collier Road in Bassendean, and we've set up got same brewing equipment, moved the whole kit up the road, and kind of stocked up our beer before moving, moved everything up, kept the beer fermenting at the old premises, set up the new brew house, and Brendan was kind of the project manager of this and did a great job. Like a lot of breweries take, you know, a good 18 months, 2 years to start, where Brendan managed to move the whole kit up the road, keep our production, load our volume up, and then get the production started again. And so that started recently. And so now we're kind of in a better facility where we can concentrate on sales. I've got two salespeople in WA, Pia and Caitlin, and we kind of concentrate on WA at present because it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
And we're doing that, but we also have distribution on the East Coast. Calibre's been in Queensland, been a long time with Nail, and plan to be a long time with them. They're doing great and growing. They're probably growing 50% a year.
Wow.
And looking after Nail in Queensland, still little but growing really good. Yep. In Adelaide and New South Wales and Victoria, we just recently joined with Empire Liquor, who distribute the beers in those states, and we're slowly getting in that market. There's obviously, when Nail started, there was about 23 breweries in Australia back in 2000. Now there's, I don't know, it's hard to get a number, but it's, I had different numbers, but it's about 450 if you include all the contract breweries.
Yep.
So there's lots of competition, makes it harder. Unfortunately, there's a lot starting to fold now too. I saw Wicked Elf the other day going to liquidation and being bought out again, and it's sad to see, especially beers that are good like that, because there is a lot of competition, new ones jumping into the market that have a lot of money behind them, or say 26 partners that invest money and time. So it's changed from back in 2000 when there was none and it was hard to get a tap point because the big breweries wouldn't let you, where now it's a lot easier to get a craft beer tap point, but there's 450 other breweries that might want it too.
It's a lot of competition, but just different competition now.
Things have changed, the market's changed. Back in 2000, people would say to me, this doesn't taste like beer, you make money selling this, where today now ale is seen as more mainstream.
Yeah.
And the new world hoppy beers are the ones booming and the people are loving it. The craft beer industry is booming, but the industry is very tough. I guess one of the major ones is excise. A third of Nail's income, because it's wholesale, is, or 28% of Nail's income on a wholesale basis is with excise.
Right.
We pay GST on top of that. So it's, wholesale brewing is a very tough market. I think a lot like the idea, but that will phase out a bit when they realise that you need to, it doesn't really add up unless you can get it to your local pubs. It's worthy.
Yeah.
Because it does cost money to produce that volume, have the staff to sell it, get it everywhere. But there are a lot of successful new wholesale businesses, breweries popping up around Australia, the new ones. There's the old ones too that are still growing well. Like in WA, there's obviously Feral and Mash, and Gage Rose is doing really good now. Over East, there's, you know, more than I know, I guess, but I guess Pirate Life and Bolter and some of the new ones that are excelling.
I tell you what, if you're not working in this industry and you're just a beer fan, it's probably the best time to be a fan of beer, because the options are just incredible. I mean, in the last 10 years, and you mentioned before, well, going back to 2000, you'd walk into a pub, and at least over East anyway, I'm not so sure about over here, but your options were, so I'm originally from Queensland, so you'd have 4X Bitter, 4X Gold. You might be lucky and have something exotic from over the border, which would be like Tui's New or VB. So the options were never amazing, and you just grew up, that's all you knew. And as you said, our background's been a very much a sort of a lager a lager drinking culture. And I remember when some of those first sort of hoppy beers and the ales started coming through where people were drinking it and going, this is not beer, especially the old school. I mean, I remember when I started getting into some of the more craft beers or some of the ales, especially I would always go and get the imported beers and stuff from Europe and whatnot. And my dad was like, oh, what's this? This doesn't, like, it's smelling the beer and going, this is not beer. Mm. And even now, like, my father-in-law is just a loyal to his new drinker, and that's just all he drinks. But every once in a while, I'll leave a beer in the fridge by accident. He'll go and have a sip of that, and he'll end up drinking it. So it's I think for the younger guys and the guys that are heavily involved into that industry, it's a pretty exciting time to be around. And I guess for that older generation who'd grown up with the lagers, I think they're starting to see. It's probably been growing pretty rapidly, but I think more people are starting to jump the fence and start to try some of these other beers.
Definitely. They are. Unfortunately, the bigger breweries are kind of very still competitive, but more in craft beer now.
Yeah.
But definitely the market is changing the craft beer. Mm. The majority is still lagers, and it, I guess, always will be.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of, you know, locals that support their local breweries in, you know, all around Australia, and are willing to try something different with more flavour and just try something new. And it's exciting. It's been an exciting trip to see it change from people not wanting to drink it to people loving it. And now you get people that are nearly obsessed with it, like on Facebook, the Perth Beer Snobs, that are kind of very critical on beer. And I basically just read it and listen to it, but they're pretty passionate about their beers.
It's kind of like it's like sporting teams and being loyal or something like that. So if you find, like, I'm sure you've got loyal people that just are passionate about Nail, and they'll preach the wonders of Nail to everybody else. And sort of like if you were married 20 years, it'd be people that just religiously would just drink New or Carlton or whatever else, 4X, and not drink anything else. And now you've got so many little smaller operations and these craft brew brands that are popping up that I think people love to gravitate towards something and feel that they're a part of.
They are a part of it. Like, they give us the motivation and to keep doing what we do, because, like I'm saying, never give up. This is the only way we'll be successful. Mm. And people like with Nail, like Chris Ruthless, he's in New South Wales, and Oxenham's in Perth, and some friends, and there's a list of them that just really stand up for Nail as and they are part of it.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't really know them. I can't wait, you know, to meet them, have good beers with them and stuff, because they do, like you as a rock star singing and stuff. Yeah. It's people loving it. It's just it's great to see when I see people buy Nail on taps and it's and bottle shops, I guess, but I don't see that so much. But it's just exciting. It's probably like one of the best things, seeing people buying Nail when I'm at a bar and seeing them buy it. It's amazing to see that, how many people are doing it back from the long journey in 2000.
It's cool. It's from a band perspective, we have, like, you've got a fan base of however many people, and they're different degrees of passionate. You know, some people are hardcore loyal fans, and then you've got more casual listeners that'll listen to a couple of your songs, like it, and then listen to something else. And we've always sort of really tried to make an effort to look after the people that are sort of in that initial first circle that are just would drop everything to do whatever they can to support. They throw money behind it, they'll promote it, they'll talk about it to their friends and do a lot of referrals. And those are the people that we'll always try and keep in with the band. So we always say the band's more than just the four guys in the band. It's this team of people. It's this family.
That's right,
and you bring in all these people that sort of help indirectly to what you do.
Yeah, I have like great family, which I mentioned before, that support us financially and help us personally and put in a lot of time. And I've got friends that are successful in their careers that are like good at business, good at lawyers, good at accounting that help me all the time. And it's a big team and many I don't know too that help now grow.
Oh, well, you're going to have some more East representation now. I'm going to go back and start preaching the wonders of VPA because this is amazing. This is really good.
Great, yeah. No, the more the better.
A couple of quick questions because I'm conscious of time, but one question I'm asking everyone this weekend, as I'm doing a whole bunch of podcast episodes, is I guess seeing the size of the operation now and, as you mentioned, forming Brew Corp and then working alongside with Brennan from Ferrell, and there's obviously room to grow. You showed me that just gigantic cold room that you're building as well. What's the next 5 years look like for you? Where do you want to go?
I guess starting up warehouses like this costs a lot. Mm. Moving the warehouse last year costs a lot. New running costs cost a lot.
Yep.
So we're at it's a stressing time.
Yeah.
And I guess this is what a lot of people don't see, that running a brewery, though we have passion and it's so good to be able to drink our beer, there's a lot of stress involved. Yep. A lot of it's startup costs are high, running costs are high, growth's high. It's pretty tough. So we've set in a position now with 323 Collier Road to be able to grow to as much as combined now and Ferrell to as much as over 8 million litres. But we've got to keep selling our beer, keep working hard. We work long hours. It wears you out. Plus we have families and we want to have a life and, you know, so we've got the next 18 months. I've got a very hard 18 months. There's lots happening. Hopefully be involved in having a brew pub. Just keep working hard, come up with another winner like VPA and Nile Red and keep growing. I just need to sell more beer and hopefully we'll do that.
Oh, we'll just have to make sure that the consumption stays high or just continues to grow. One last thing, this is a bit of a cheeky question. Would you ever sponsor a heavy metal band?
Yeah, I would. What I'd need kind of in that is to be have the beer where they play. It would be I'd always and same as sporting events or whatever.
Yeah.
Now would like to help. We don't have money in the bank account, but we've got beer that we can supply and do a sponsorship with beer for sporting clubs, for good bands, for whatever. But it's just like local breweries supporting locals and local drinkers supporting local breweries, bands and everything. It's all what craft beer is about, locals supporting locals, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. Well, thank you very much. I'm watching the time and I know you've got a busy afternoon and I've got to keep jetting, but thank you so much for showing me around. This is a incredible, like this exceeded what expectations I had. I didn't really know what to expect, to be honest, but this is an immense operation that you got here. And as you said, like the next 18 months or 2 years is going to be pretty grueling as you try and keep your head above water with all these new costs and higher costs that you have. But just wish you all the best. It's a great beer and I'm looking forward to trying a few more. Hopefully I'll find some places around Perth over the next 24 hours and I'll indulge.
I appreciate your time too and good luck with what you do.
Yeah, thank you. Cheers.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone. I really hope you enjoyed that episode with John. As said, all the links and everything we discussed will be in the show notes over at andysocial.net or andydowling.net. So you can go and check that out. You can go to nailbrewing.com.au and you can find Nail Brewing on most social media platforms as well. I have all the links on andysocial.net anyway if you want to make it easy for yourself. Really, really cool. A lot of fun. That was a really, really fun episode. And thank you so much to John for spending some time on a Saturday morning to have a chat to me at the warehouse. Some lovely gifts as well. And hopefully this will be the first of many conversations with John. I'm so cheeky asking about a sponsorship. But who knows? Who knows what we'll bring in the future. But it's really cool to meet new people and learn a lot more about people that are really trying to make an impact and find success and achieve greatness. And John's certainly somebody that's stuck at it, has resilience and persistence to really sort of achieve some of the goals that he set out to achieve. Now, before we wrap it up, as I said, everything's over at andysocial.net. If you do want to support this podcast, please hop on over to any of my social media platforms. So Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, I think, what else have I got? YouTube, of course. You can go over to those different social media platforms. Please like, rate, review, share, tag, all those different social media actions. Do that. This podcast, if you are listening via iTunes, please rate and review it. The more ratings and reviews that this podcast gets, the more reach it will get, the more exposure we'll get, the more listeners that we'll get, and it'll help me continue to push this podcast to, I guess, greater borders, greater distances. I'm losing track of what I'm saying here. But it's going to make it bigger and better, and it's going to help me find more people from all walks of life and make this podcast continue to get bigger and better. So thank you for everybody that's been so loyal over the last couple of years, as always. And I know I get a bit gushy at the end of these episodes, but thank you so much. And we'll be back next week with another episode. It'll be one of quite a few for my Perth weekend. I'm about to get moving for my next podcast interview, and this next one will be out next week. So we'll stagger them out. More coming. Enjoy. Tell a friend. Let me know what you think. Throw me some suggestions of more people. I've got quite a few more cities to do for the rest of the year. As I said, I'm doing every capital city in the country for 2017. So I've still got Melbourne to come in May, and I've still got a book, Hobart, Brisbane, Canberra, Darwin, and I've got a few Sydney ones popping up as well in the near future. So there's a lot happening, and your support means a hell of a lot to me. So lots of exciting times to come. Thank you so much, and you'll hear my annoying voice next week. You're ready, you're ready social. You're ready.